the end. But the moment has been prepared for.
Hello and welcome to Third Degree Burn. We're finally here. We're finally at the penultimate issue and the final issue of our index show covering Alpha Flight as John Byrne conceived and published it with Marvel Comics. And we are terribly, terribly excited. At least I am. I've got to let you know, lovely listener, there have been fights behind the curtain. People have been wrestling each other and bickering about who gets to do which issue. And I think we've got a great lineup for you now. We've got a good panel of experts. I'm going to go around the table alphabetically and start with Tim Elliott.
Hello. I don't know if I would say expert, but I'm happy to be here.
We have Nigel Svink in Japan.
Hello there.
And then rounding up the panel tonight, we have Fred West on the
Hey,
West
everybody.
Coast.
How's it going?
And we might be joined by one or two of our other friends, but we will have to see. If I haven't mentioned, I'm your host, Kirk Greenfield, and it's been my pleasure to be sitting in the chair for Brian when he's been had other commitments. But I'm really excited about this. I can't tell you this. I didn't know it as it was coming out, but this was the focal point of the first 2 years, and it was building towards this, and I had no idea. So I was on the roller coaster ride as each issue was coming out. And, oh, man, I hope I can share some of the excitement that I experienced. Of course, now it's, what, 40 years in the rearview mirror, maybe more?
Don't say it like that, Kirk.
And so it's hard to think of it without spoiling it. That is, I remember what I was feeling like as it came out, and I hope that we've been able to convey that. You may already know where this builds to and what how it resolves, but we're excited to share it with you. So we have a host of presenters for you tonight. I believe, unless we have any burn news, and I suspect that we do, does anybody want to share anything with us from the panel?
I don't have anything other than the Elsewyn stuff we were talking about off mic, the release of the Elsewyn.
That's it. I'm holding mine up to the camera so you all can see it. The first volume of X-Men Elsewhen by John Byrne and published in cooperation with Marvel and with, I'm not sure who else his partners are. The volume has just shipped and it's arriving this week and it's sweeping the internet. People are very excited about that. Yeah. Or they're very dismayed that it's not what they had thought it was going to be. So I won't say that it's polar opposites, but you can tell the excitement because people are posting and saying, wait, I thought he was continuing the story from there. Oh, no, what about, so there's a lot of buzz right now. Only the first volume of, I'm going to say approximately 10 issues, maybe there are a few more that snuck in there, are contained in this first volume. So if you have not bought your copy, rush out to reserve it. I believe they're going back for a second printing, but do not hold me to that. Talk to your local comic book shop or our connection, which is Ferret Comics up in
Minnesota,
up in Minneapolis. Wherever you want to get it from, talk to them, get it on reserve, because this is going to be talked about quite a bit.
I think it just shows how relevant that Byrne still is, that he's not really doing anything current, but that there is still an interest in his work that this would get, that he did this as kind of a side project or just something he just wanted to do for himself. and he released the pages to us, or he released the pages for free. We've covered them on previous episodes. And Chris Royale, his former editor at Image or Dark Horse, Image, I believe, over the Star Trek stuff, you know, I can't get the ball rolling to get this inked and published and put out in a, you know, an actual physical form. And it's apparently selling very well, I guess. So it just shows that he is still relevant, even though he's not really doing anything currently comic-wise.
And he's in demand.
Exactly.
You know, people recognize the name. They know his contribution. They're willing to pony up for this. And I think that in itself will probably assure at least a second volume being printed. Not a second printing, a second volume, if not a third one. And I know that Byrne is getting up in years. I will share with you, there's a photo on the inside cover of this paper dust jacket that shows a man with a white beard who I would not have recognized that it was him. I would not recognize it as John Byrne, the artist that we know and love, had somebody not told me or tipped me off before I got the volume that, hey, they think they got the wrong photo of another John Byrne, and it's been printed by mistake. I frankly can't see that. I can't see Marvel or anybody allowing that to happen.
He just looks like he's lost some weight. He looks a little thinner in the face, and he's not wearing his glasses.
And he's getting up in years. I hope we can get the next two volumes out. I hope that he's able to finish whatever input he needs to do. But I'm encouraged.
Well, this is where we need Brian. What was the last work that Byrne did for Marvel? Was it
X-Men Hidden Years?
That's what I was trying to say. Hidden Years, maybe? I don't think. Because then he kind of did some DC stuff, and he did this Star Trek stuff. But I'm trying to think. It's been a while since he's done anything for Marvel.
John Byrne's last work for Marvel Comics was X-Men Hidden Years issue 22 in 2001.
And he said something, I don't want to put words in his mouth, but he said something about that he would never work for a corporation like Marvel that was intent on destroying its product or something. It was a scathing, shot across the bow from in the past. But yet here he has produced this quality work. And I think not that he's eaten his words, but I think I'm glad to see that he has reconsidered it and that he was listening to his friend and what would you call his friend? His editor?
Brian says he's called the Byrne Whisperer, but he was his longtime editor at Image under all the stuff he was doing, like his possibly his X-Men stuff, the Star Trek stuff he did. I think the Fumetti books he was doing, the color Star Trek novels he was doing.
Yeah.
Or the photo novels, I should say.
Well, I'm so glad that he's got a good friend and working partner who was able to get this across the finish line. That's great. I hope he continues to listen to the man, because I think they're a good team. They're getting good product out there. But that's not why we're here today. We're here for I want to keep saying the penultimate issue of Alpha Flight, which is true. 27 would be considered the penultimate issue if 28 is considered the ultimate. So who's got the info on 27?
That would be me.
Tim,
I do.
Tim, you have your book report? Come up in front of the class.
I have my report ready here. And I did crib a little bit of it, but. All right, Alpha Flight number issue 27. As usual, as this whole run is, our writer is John Byrne, our artist is John Byrne. Our inker is listed as Keith Williams and John Byrne. So I don't know if Byrne did some inking and then Keith did the rest. Our colorist is still Andy Yankus. The letterer is Rick Parker. Our editors are still Denny O'Neill and Don Daly. And our editor-in-chief is still Jim Shooter. This had a cover date of October 1985 with an on-sale date of, it's very close, July 2nd, 1985. So we're almost up to the 40th anniversary here, Kirk. 32 pages, and it cost 65 cents. It would have cost Nigel 30p. or it costs Burns fellow Canadians 75 Canadian cents. Our other Byrne work at the same time was he did Daredevil 223. He did the cover art. He did one more a chapter in his Last Galactus story that was an Epic Illustrated number 32. He did Fantastic Four 283. He was writer-artist, and he's getting close to his end run on that. And he did the cover art for Avengers 260. And all those, at least the Alpha Flight stuff, can be found in Alpha Flight Classic number 3, trade paperback, or the Alpha Flight John Byrne Omnibus hardcover. If you can find that, that's a great book. Our story is entitled Betrayal. The fake Guardian and Omega Flight gloat over the defeated Alpha Flight members in the West Edmonton Mall. Courtney has a plan to lure the remainder of the team into a trap by torturing Talisman until she involuntarily sends them a psychic summons. While this is happening, Shaman is finishing patching up Aurora's ribs from her injuries she sustained in the combat exercise earlier that day, and Box is using a dimensional scanner to seek out a replacement body for Walter, finding a suitable large and non-sapient specimen in a certain dimensional crossroads. Hint, hint. Before he can take a closer look, Shaman picks up his daughter's distress and teleports himself, Box, and Aurora to the source. At Doug Thompson's home in Yellowknife, Narya has also detected the call, and despite having hidden her continued presence on Earth from the team, cannot resist the compulsion to fly south to help them. Shaman's group meets with Guardian at the mall, who makes it seem to them that the rest of the Alpha Flight has incapacitated the Omegans instead of the other way around. Guardian wonders aloud where Smart Alec ended up, and Shaman fills him in on how he had to store the brain-dead body of Alec in his pouch. Offended, Courtney snatches Shaman's pouch and flies off with it in an attempt to free Smart Alec. Before the Alphans can stop him, or her, he ends up pulling the pouch inside out and releasing the void it's meant to access.
Nothing. I heard some squealing or something.
Oh, no, everything's fine.
But the animal is inside out.
I heard that.
It turned inside out?
And it exploded.
Mega Flight immediately flies from the rapidly expanding and all-devouring field of madness, inducing mystic energy. Most of Alpha Flight is quickly swallowed up, leaving only Shaman, who prioritizes rescuing and reviving Talisman. He charges her with stopping the void from within, since she is the only mortal whose mind can withstand the effects. Talisman is nervous, but her father promises her that she will be safe. She heads into the void and navigates the impossible, constantly shifting landscape to find Alpha Flight and bring them out. Box's mechanical brain can withstand the sensations, and most of the others are mercifully unconscious, but Aurora is awake and her already fragile psyche is at risk from the void's effects. Talisman's presence inside the void begins to reverse its expansion in the real world, allowing Shaman to help close it back from the other side. The prone Alphans are soon all evacuated, and Shaman is about to pull Talisman out as well when Courtney distracts him with a blast, revealing that he has captured the incoming Snowbird as a hostage while everyone else is dealing with the void. The robot threatens to kill Snowbird, but Shaman thinks he can save both her and his daughter by delaying his rescue of Talisman for a moment to pull from the void, as he would do from his pouch, a substance he can throw at Courtney's face to incapacitate him and give Narya a chance to escape. Wow, that's all one sentence. Unfortunately, the collapse of the void accelerates at that moment, returning to the form of the pouch and trapped Talisman within. Shaman breaks down as he realizes that once again, he failed in his promise to keep his family safe. The end. Now, that was taken straight from the wiki. I didn't write any of that because I didn't have time. So that was a little long-winded, but in essence, that's what happened. Good. Yeah.
I was okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's not the end.
No,
Are you sure?
Continued. To be continued.
Yes.
The next issue box states crossover in 30 days. And, you know, frankly, I had no idea what that meant. I was expecting someone would cross over into the Ditko dimension or wherever the void was that just got released.
Well, and I don't think they had announced this yet, but on the letters page, they announced that Burns leaving the book.
They did?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's from Denny O'Neill. He says Burns leaving. Yeah.
And the original, when I originally got this, that was the first I knew about Burn leaving Alpha Flight when they told us here at the end of this issue.
Well, and the cover, the one that you're going to cover next, Nigel, gives away which I thought was kind of a big surprise. They should have kept under their hat, but they reveal it on the cover, and they reveal it in this letters page. They talk about who the big guest star is. I'm not going to say it now, but the big guest star. Mm. And so that, like, you guys are blowing the surprise, because that's such a great splash page at the end of that issue.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Well, think about the egos that are involved, and the man they may have come down across the company. I'll talk about that in a few minutes, but I'm not surprised by that. Mm.
Well, they hint at it. I mean, they give you enough hints that you could have figured it out with the silhouette you see, and they're talking about the crossroads of reality and the nexus and that kind of thing. So,
I'm sorry. I drew a different conclusion. I was thinking of a different guest star. Sorry.
No.
The other one.
That was forced upon us.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, the one where Box is looking at that screen, and if you were or had been a reader of Hulk up to issue 300, you would recognize that picture on the screen.
Yeah.
Even though, I stopped reading Hulk after 300 when he was whisked away to the other dimension, but that picture. You know, if you were reading Hulk, you'll have seen it. So you would put the two together, because even in silhouette, that's a pretty good picture of the Hulk as well on the next page.
And I think in our previous issues, Bill Mantlo is listed as being like helping out with the story. Yeah. That's a clue there, too.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not a big secret about the Hulk anyway, I don't think.
It occurs to me, I've often wondered what was Burns' intent if he hadn't been planning an exit, if he wasn't planning on doing what evolves, what was his original plan? And it just now occurred to me that as I look at, what is this, page 6, where, as you say, Box and Shaman are looking at a screen and you recognize the image of swirling patterns and what have you. And then the next page, you see the Hulk. I'm wondering if originally the intent was to have Talisman captured in the void and have the Hulk come through that dimension and come in some way, come out of the pouch with her, that it was the Hulk that was going to rescue her. But I don't know. I'm making this up out of whole cloth. I have no idea.
Well, it's a good point, Kirk, that if he hadn't been forced to put the Beyonder in his story, because this is taking place during Secret Wars 2, and books were kind of forced to have a Beyonder appearance. If he wasn't forced to include that, how would he have rescued Talisman? Mm-hmm. Maybe you're right, Kirk. Maybe if he wasn't going to leave the book, I don't think the Hulk would be involved at all, because unless he was just going to do the Hulk alongside doing this as well. But because him and Mantlo switched books, that's why he brings the Hulk in. It's just a neat way to get the Hulk back, because I don't know. It's the same with how was Mantlo going to get the Hulk back if they hadn't switched books?
Yeah. Well, that's probably their co-plotting sessions and why there was a credit earlier.
Mm-hmm.
We will never know. Well, unless Byrne talks about it. And where's Brian? because he usually has the insight to that. We will probably never know.
Well, they are so cavalier about, oh, we found a body. It has no brain. It has no brain waves. This is great. And he's like, yeah, it's built like a brick shipyard. So Walter just it's a great big body. You know, you have no idea. Can this body survive on Earth? Can it breathe our atmosphere? You know, maybe only has one eye. You have no idea. Maybe it's got six arms. And they're just like, yeah, it'll work. It'll be fine. And Shaman's not even the voice of reason. He's like, oh, yeah, this is great. You know, look what you've done.
Cavalier scientists strike again.
Well, yeah, it's like, it's just a weird, it's a very comic booky way of getting to try to find Walter a new body.
Yeah.
Well, we've just been through a very comic booky resurrection story the issue before.
Mm-hmm. And
if you are able and willing to swallow that. All right. I want to go back to the cover just for a moment and take a look at that corner box. And how many Alpha Flight people are in there? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Five Alpha Flights and one imposter. Whereas the issue before, as I recall, was packed with eight. So I'm not sure what games are being played there, but we're at least keeping score. We have, that's interesting. We have Shaman, we have North Star, we have Aurora, Puck, we have Snowbird and Guardian, but we don't have Talisman, we don't have Heather, we don't have Box, and we don't have Walter Lewowski.
That's Box. Yeah.
That's Box.
Well, you know, we don't have Roger Box, and
Roger
Box has never been one of the people in the corner.
Because
Roger isn't the superhero, the Box was.
Yeah, he's just the mechanic.
Yeah, right. I agree with that. Well, I thought this was a beautiful cover. I thought it was well organized. I hate word balloons on covers with a passion. But this one works. It focuses your attention. You can see the dilemma. If your eye is drawn right down his arm towards the face of both Shaman and Talisman, and the spikes keep her in the spotlight, and on the other side, she's somewhat balanced by Snowbird. I just think this cover works really well, and I'll give the word balloons a pass.
I wish they had just colored the robot green. Like she is in the comics. She kind of her face blends a little bit with the whiteness of her costume.
That's true. In fact, in the trade paperback that I'm reading from, the you have to turn the cover to get into it. But as it's reprinted here, they're both in the same spread, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So I've got it right next to one another. And on that splash page with the green face.
Yeah.
That's great. I love that splash page.
That is so good. Boy, it's stoking all the feelings. You feel betrayed that you were misled. The robot seems to be in charge, or Courtney, however you want to describe that entity. Mm-hmm. And I just really, God, I feel manipulated and so appreciative that Byrne did this. That's a weird way to say it, but
is that how you felt, Nigel, when you had the rug pulled out from under you?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. Well, I was just like, oh, damn, you know. as I said last time, though, by revealing herself or itself to be the enemy behind Omega Flight again, I thought, all right, at least we're going to get another good battle between Alpha Flight and Omega Flight. So I was looking forward to the action, although again, it disappoints on that level.
Yeah. You didn't feel there was enough direct conflict in this issue or at all between the two?
Well, in both battles between Omega and an Alpha Flight, you know, going back to issue 11, 12. I mean, there was a little bit, but I don't know. Burns seemed to kind of want to avoid most of the fighting. You know, it's kind of...
I agree with Nigel.
It took place, but we're not going to see it kind of thing. And I like a good, I like a good old Donnybrook, especially in a team book, you know, like Avengers and stuff like that, where they have a good go at another group of villains, or they have to fight somebody incredibly strong and powerful. And it seems to last the whole of the issue sometimes. They're just battling. Yeah. But this, I don't know, it seemed to avoid getting that sort of situation.
It really does a disservice to the members of Omega Flight, because we don't really get to see the sense of their abilities or powers. We don't necessarily get a sense of who they are. They're very cut and dry. And when you have a team like Alpha Flight, who's been together, we've been following them for 2 years, they get taken out by these cartoon characters all of a sudden. It's like, that just doesn't seem right, you know, kind of thing. So... yeah.
Well, I mean, is it that they get taken out, or is it that they had an ace in the hole who was manipulating everyone and setting this up? I mean, you follow what I'm saying?
Yeah. I do follow what you're saying, is that they were all caught off guard. But that's Omega Flight's kind of bread and butter. They, you know, in the first battle, they weren't prepared because they didn't know. And they didn't apparently learn anything from that first time they faced Omega Flight to be a little suspicious of what the heck's going on, you know, kind of thing. And now they're caught flat-footed again. You're like,
But to put it as Admiral Akbar might, it's a trap.
Yeah, yeah.
So they're not ready for, and they think it's Guardian.
As I was reviewing this, the spread across the top of page 2 and 3, I just, for some reason, my brain just flashed on, "Let's go to the mall" from Robin Sparkles.
Well, Omega Flight is a little underpowered. They don't have what in gaming you would call a tank. They don't have, because they had Box, and you know, he went over to the side, so they don't have any muscle really.
And they don't have Sasquatch. He was their big muscle for a long time.
Yeah, he's gone. Guardian's the only one really. He's the only, you know, Wild Child is kind of a discount Wolverine, and Flashback is he's kind of called out. He's kind of useless. He can't do any. Other than make multiples of himself, he can't do anything.
And that's the weirdest thing. Like, I never understood Flashback's abilities at any point until later in this issue or the next issue, where it's kind of revealed. But it's like, it was like, who's the guy in black and white? Like, what is he, mime? What the heck's going on with this guy?
Yeah.
Personally, I love Diamond Lil. I think she's the most interesting member of Omega Flight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. You're supposed to become sympathetic with her next issue, I believe.
Yeah. Yeah, she's the one that's given any kind of a kind of a backstory.
Well, I've got a question for you. We've already seen the reveal that Guardian is actually Courtney, whatever her name is,
Delphine, the green robot.
Okay. Now, at 11 and 12, we see her gather the team. We see her gather Gamma Flight, and we see them attack Alpha Flight. And we see her confront. Does she confront Heather then? But the point is, I question whether Omega Flight has seen Courtney's true face, that she's a robot, by the end of 12. And then here we have her revealed to Heather last issue, and they're calling Guardian Boss, Wild Child does, but have they seen the green robot's face? I don't think so. I don't think anybody's seen it, because by the time Alpha Flight arrives, at the bottom of page 9 or into the mall, he's got his mask back on. He's got the Guardian. So I question if they realize at this point who's leading them.
They are taking their orders from, and they keep calling her or it or whatever, Courtney, even though it's basically she's in like a man's body now. And so I'm sure she's the same. And to your point, Kirk, I don't remember if she was revealed to the rest of the team right before Mac died that she was a robot, if the rest of Omega found out, because she wasn't fighting with them at that point. She was just kind of more of a, she was like more subterfuge, you know, she was tricking Heather and Mac and kind of setting up. She was basically being, the guy that died, I can't remember his name now. The guy in the wheelchair.
Jeffries? Jackson. No.
Jackson.
Jackson. Yeah. She was kind of acting as his arms and legs. And that seems to be her programming in this, because she talks about that, yes, their main plan was to kill Guardian, but they didn't finish the job. And it seems like she's compelled to destroy the rest of Alpha Flight. So I don't know if that's, or almost like she's doing it out for over revenge over them killing their old boss. So it's a little, her motivation is a little odd.
I think as a robot, she was programmed by Jackson to destroy Alpha Flight.
Yeah, so she's carrying it out.
And that programming has never been superseded.
Right.
You know, after 11 and 12, you know, Omega Flight or Gamma Flight was in the wind, basically. And when we see this version of Mac, and I'm doing air quotes like you guys can see the Mac, it comes back. Obviously, there's been a transformation of the body shape from Delphine to Mac, because those two characters side by side do not line up. So the members of Omega Flight must have been aware that they must have been in communication this entire time to coordinate as a team to get to this point. And they must know that she's a robot to keep the Omega Flight together all this time. I mean, they're a little more coordinated than Alpha Flight, our hero team, is.
Yeah. I think there's a story there. I wouldn't mind, you know, are you listening, Mr. Byrne? I wouldn't mind seeing a Alpha Flight Elsewhen story about how did Omega Flight keep it together? Did they know? Or were they just impressed that, oh, look, Jackson has converted Guardian to be on our side. Okay, we'll follow him now. I think there's a story there.
No.
I mean, it seems like from last issue to this issue, when she rips her, maybe not, she rips her face off to Heather, because they were smooching, and she rips her face off and says, aha, I'm a robot. And then I guess at one point she took Heather to the rest of Omega, because they all each have a person that they've kind of knocked out.
And they're propping them up.
Right, and she's monologuing about how great they did. And now they, you know, they need to keep them. And that then it gets into her having to threaten Talisman so that Shaman will feel the disturbance in the Force and come and rescue her. Because she's, you know, they've drugged her, so she can't consciously call him, but he is, or has to be like under distress. So he starts to choke her or shock her or something. And then that's when he feels the after he's, you know, he's busy bandaging up Aurora. And that's when we find out about this little fishing expedition that they're going on. Literally fishing expedition, because.
Yeah.
I got something else in the mall. Have you guys been reading the names of the stores? Or looking for names in the stores?
I've looked at them. I don't know if they're actual brands or not.
Yeah, I didn't see one until we get to page number 10. And they're propping up.
I see one behind Diamond Lil. Oh, gosh.
because
I mean that's a direct reference to Oshkosh denim.
Oh, is it? I wouldn't know. You, I saw yeah. that. I thought, what's Bagosh? No idea.
Well, it is Oshkosh Bagosh. That's a
yeah,
yeah. That's right. A. Is that Minnesota, Wisconsin, or some I don't know where that's based,
yeah.
but it's a
yeah.
kind of a Midwest kind of. And the other is Hubbles, I think, or Hubblers, or
yeah.
I don't know where you guys are getting that from, but I'm on page 10, and as they're propping up the limp bodies in the back, you see Erlo and Stern. Once again, a reference to Roger Stern.
You know the defendant, Dern?
Yes, I know Dern. And never did there live a kinder, more generous man. He's always been a good, law-abiding citizen.
Oh, give me a break! Stern! He's nothing but a low-down, double-dealing, backstabbing, larcenous, perverted worm!
Yeah. Probably.
Don Byrne's partner. And Erlo... I may be wrong, but I'm thinking that Stern's wife at the time might have, her last name might have been Merlo, but don't hold me to that. I haven't researched that.
Stern. Yeah, so that.
But at least Stern. There's no question. Yeah. Yeah. Stern's name is there.
Okay.
Sorry, I'm flipping through the trade here looking for little bits to share. I got to tell you, when I'm moving forward now to page 12, as Guardian slash Delphine reaches in the pouch to rescue what she thinks is supposed to be Smart Aleck.
Yeah.
And says, he lied. There's nothing in here at all. He's not, he's looking into the pouch, I think. But I was so thrilled when he turned it inside out and it backfires on him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my God! I was just cheering. I mean,
artistically, it's fantastic.
When I was reading this, and I suspect that my coworkers would have heard me shout and yell, and
Well, I think the page before that, page 10, where he does, you can almost tell when he's trying to be kind of shy about her, being subtle about, well, what about a Smart Aleck? What happened to him? He goes, oh, well, this is what we had to do. And he's like, oh, he goes, that's inhuman. And he gets all indignant about it. You can almost tell almost like he goes from a masculine stance to a feminine stance because he's kind of giving away who he is. Because at this point, Shaman, in fact, after he grabs his pouch, Shaman, he still, I guess, thinks he is Guardian. He's like, come back. Don't run away from my pouch.
Right.
To me, it felt a little bit like if you've seen the last Star Trek episode, Turnabout Intruder, where Kirk gets possessed by, or Kirk switches bodies with a woman. Shatner does a great job of acting kind of really crazy, but he does it as the woman being Shatner.
Yeah.
And that's what this feels like here, that this is really the real Courtney coming through here. And then of course, to your point, I do like the way this kind of technicolor explosion just eats everything up.
Do you see any designs or any words in any of this rainbow shattered dimension, the void, whatever you want to call it? I don't.
No, it just almost looks like, to me, circuitry or something.
Yeah.
Yes. It looks to me like Byrne's interpretation of Steve Ditko's other dimensions, but love it.
That does when Talisman is there on page 16, that looks very Ditko-like. Yeah. And I'm almost disappointed that I want it to look more like the fracturedness in that's on the other two pages when it first starts coming out and starts engulfing everybody, as opposed to they're more you can kind of make out actual shapes and it looks like structures and things like that. And maybe it is because it's a kind of a nod to the craziness that Ditko would do, because he even drawn her as being distorted. Look the way she looks.
This reminds me a bit of Jack Kirby's Fantastic Four in the negative zone.
Negative
as they pass through the distortion zone, the distortion area. That's kind of what it reminds me of. And so I wondered if that's where this was going. But
has a very Doctor Strange feel to me a little bit.
Yeah, very.
Mm-hmm. And I love that even the boxes on page 16, the box lines are wavy, you know, kind of thing for the panels. It's really nice. It's
reminds me a great deal just before they canceled Doctor Strange out of Strange Tales. They gave him a mask. That was the origin of the blue mask. And trying to think, I think the Tom Palmer was inking. I think it was Gene Colan doing the artwork for Doctor Strange.
Mm-hmm.
They were doing real trippy stuff with the borders like this in every issue. And I'm not sure if that contributed to the strip's failure, but as they came to the end, boy, there were some
trippy stuff, some
other dimensional trippy stuff, film strips that they were walking on or folding back on themselves. I mean, that's what it reminds me of a great deal.
Did they do any of the kind of the photo collage stuff that Kirby would do when he wanted to show some kind of an outer space thing? Okay.
I don't know anybody else who's done that. Only Byrne has come sort of close with his photo realistic drawing. Nobody else has ever done any of those. There's a word for it. Photo collage is maybe the best that we could come up with, but nobody has done that again.
Well, it's
I don't think that entirely worked either. The quality of the printing back in the 60s when he was trying that, they always tended to come out muddy and dark compared to the
you're putting
bright
this
colored artwork.
Yeah, you're
superimposed over top of it.
When you're printing it on this newsprint, I'm sure the original pages look great.
But, yeah, I don't know. I don't know that I've ever seen one.
I don't think I have either. Well, it's
they've been collected. Just a side note here. Somebody has gone through, I keep mentioning this, John Morrow's Jack Kirby collector did a 1 or 2 page summary collecting every listing of every one of those pages. And there was something like 18 of them. I don't remember, but they've tracked them all down as far as where they appeared. And, you know, I was fortunate to have a handful of them. And then he went over to D.C. and did a few there. But the list exists. If you ever want to go hunt them down, you could get the list from John Morrow of Tomorrow's Publications. That's just a side note.
Well, I think they're all in the FF run, right? He didn't do it in any of the books.
No, there were a few others. There were a few in D.C.,
New God stuff.
Most of them were in the FF. I'm trying to think. I don't remember any in Thor. I don't remember any in Cap. There was at least one cover, FF 33 with the Submariner. That was sort of that thing on the cover. I mean, if I sat here, I'd bore you by reciting chapter and verse, the ones that I know of, including the Negative Zone rescue of Reed Richards in about 62, 63 issues. But it doesn't. I don't know where I was going with that, but
one in the Galactus trilogy as well.
Oh yes, as Galactus releases his devices, coming out. Yes, good for you. Well,
a quick question. Why do you think when this void is being, I guess, I think he puts it that talisman, her power is somehow causing it to contract and it's shrinking. And that's how they all kind of pop out. You know, they look like dead bodies, but they're all, I think, unconscious. And then he's about to grab her, and then he gets blasted, and Guardian has Snowbird by the throat, who has shown up at some point off panel. And he, of course, his daughter's pleading with him, no, no, you know, he goes, oh, no, this will take a minute. It'll take a second. Why do you think he bothered to save Snowbird? I mean, he does say that she's as vulnerable in her human or mortal form as anybody else. Why he didn't finish saving, I mean, I know it, why he did because of the story, but why he didn't save Talisman. And then, because he can, maybe he can only pull one thing out of the void, or the void of the pouch at once. He can't pull her and this glop that he pulls out at the same time.
I wondered if it accelerated its collapse because he drew something out of that glop. But I don't think he was misleading or lying to her. I had the impression that it started to collapse faster because she was the bait. She was the powerful force that went into inside and got the others out. But because she was inside, I mean, if he was inside, it would have collapsed on him. You follow what I'm saying? I just think things got away.
Yeah, I don't think he misled her.
He's flawed.
Yeah, I think he did think he had time because maybe at the rate the thing was shrinking. And then once he pulls out this glop stuff and throws it and hits Guardian in the face, then suddenly he turns back. Well, he waits to see her fall and he goes to save her. Then he realizes, oh, this thing has shrunk down to almost nothing. And he sees her hand kind of come out of it. But I think to your point, Kirk, he just miscalculated what he was doing. And he's going to, you know,
but at what point does he say, hey, I can turn it inside out again and pull her out?
That's true. She's still in there.
You know, he's a terrible father.
Oh, be kind.
It's not Father's Day.
he's a flawed human, and he's the heart of Alpha Flight. And so even though he may be making mistakes, even though he has to break promises, his heart's in the right place. I don't blame him. I can't find it in me to be critical of him.
Well, is it because
Burn is manipulating the character?
Right. You know? But is it his fatherly feelings towards Snowbird that he did deliver her, he helped raise her, he feels, and his own daughter left him when she was young, so he's been estranged from her. So Snowbird in a way filled that void.
And that's good.
Is he,
I hadn't thought of that.
Is he now feeling more protective to his surrogate daughter than he is his newly reconnected with daughter, Talisman? And then he does plan on saving her. It does get away from him, but
he knows that Talisman is extremely powerful, because when Courtney/Guardian says something to him, I don't remember if it's this issue or the next one. No, it's next issue when the Yonder arrives. There is a discussion about how powerful she is and what's holding her back. Mm-hmm. And I think at some point, you know, I think he knows. He knows how powerful she is. He knows that she's the chosen one, and he knows that she's untrained. And so, you know, Ben O'Reilly, what's his name from Star Wars? Ben Kenobi, Obi-Wan Kenobi. He's trying to train her, but he's not the ideal person to do that. But he's doing the best he can.
Right? Yeah. I don't fault him for that. I just wonder where his subconsciously what he's thinking. And I guess his magic doesn't work on anything inside the pouch, because couldn't he shrink her the way he shrank Smart Aleck and then pull her out and then unshrink her? Because his dilemma is that nothing that can't fit through the mouth of the pouch can come out of it. So she's too big to come out of the his little bag. So
Well, where is Smart Aleck at this point?
He's still in the bag somewhere.
He's in the void somewhere.
Yeah,
buy that.
No. He's not in the void anymore. He crawled out.
Did he?
He did. There was a point where he crawls out unobserved, and he was taken over by one of the great ones or something, but he gets out of the bag.
All right.
But he must be talking about a vessel for something else.
The cat's out of the bag.
Yeah. Well, his bag's a little bit like Felix the Cat's bag.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Boy, I haven't seen that in a long time. So if we go to page 22, we're talking about the pouch.
Ooh.
At first panel, does Shaman's arm look just a little bit short to you?
Well, yeah.
I thought when he started screaming there, no, that it was grabbing him and that he was going to get sucked in. That's not where it went, but
no.
That's what initially went through my mind. It's like, uh-oh.
Remember, the pouch is bigger on the inside than it is on the outside.
That's right.
Yeah, it's the Indian TARDIS. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Any other comments on this issue, or do you want to move on?
No, I think this has kind of lasting ramifications for him, and we'll talk about that, but, you know.
Oh, yeah.
It just got to screw him up.
Oh, yeah.
Well, the good news is when Byrne does his alpha flight elsewhere, he'll be able to pick up the threads of this and show us where Shaman goes, where two young men.
That I would be interested in reading if he did this with alpha flight.
Yeah.
or the Hulk, because he only had 6 issues with the Hulk. If he did the Hulk, that would be even better.
Maybe he could do a split book and do
Alpha Flight and the Hulk. Bring a split book back, yeah.
Let's not ask for too much. Okay. If you guys don't have any further comments, we have, of necessity, we have to, a filler between the two issues. And for those of you who are just following this story for the first time, and I know there aren't many of you, The plot thread goes into Secret Wars 2, issue number 4, for 3 pages. It is critical that you understand what happens there. It is not a John Byrne story. So I have that. I'm going to present the next 3 pages. The script and writer for Secret Wars 2, issue number 4, is Jim Shooter, and the art is by Al Milgram and others. And I won't pursue it because we're really not interested in that creative team. But here's a little background for you before I do a very brief summary.
Spider-Man,
Dr. Doom, Captain America, and other action figures from the Marvel Secret Wars collection, each sold separately. New from Mattel.
Secret Wars was a company-wide crossover event that, depending on who you talk with, was either great or terrible. It certainly was a commercial success, and it spawned a sequel called Secret Wars 2, that featured the main character, the Beyonder, taking human form and exploring what it means to be human. He'd taken a cross between Captain America's physique, Michael Jackson's flamboyant clothing, and a mullet and looks reminiscent of David Hasselhoff. His power set was virtually unlimited, a lot like the Molecule Man, who played a significant role in that story as well. And he's in a green tunic outfit in this issue, Secret Wars 2, issue 4. Now, all titles in the company were mandated to have a crossover of some sort, tying it into their storyline or at least featuring either the Beyonder in their mag or their character's appearance in Secret Wars 2, or both. By issue number 4, it was Alpha Flight's turn. And I'm not certain whose idea it was to do it this way, but there are at least 2 plot developments in 3 critical pages that were not drawn by Byrne that occurred. And they're reprinted in the 3rd Alpha Flight Classics trade paperback. Now, we won't go over them in detail because it's not Byrne that I know of, and it's certainly not his artwork. So here's the summary. The Beyonder has just appeared out of thin air at the West Edmonton Mall in Alberta, Canada, where Alpha Flight and Omega Flight have just been fighting. Similar to all manufactured meetings and fights in Marvel Comics, Alpha Flight immediately attacks the figure, thinking that it was yet another member of Omega Flight, who had just cleaned their clocks, by the way. Omega Flight, though, does not appear at all in this issue. The Beyonder deflects hot-headed North Star into Aurora, showing knowledge that it will cause a flash. He dodges Puck and flips Box backwards. He immediately tames Snowbird's form of an Arctic bear and causes her to go to sleep. Then, as Shaman confronts him, the Beyonder admits that he's the very man he was seeking to meet. He takes Shaman's small pouch from him and enlarges it to a giant size, saying he's willing to pay for what he seeks. and he pulls an unconscious talisman from inside the pouch. Now, he hands her off to Alpha Flight and then reaches once more into the normal-sized pouch without looking into it. He extracts a single gold wedding ring. Shaman is stunned and amazed, as he thought Talisman was lost forever. Alpha Flight tries to make nice, and with that, having returned the pouch to Shaman, the Beyonder vanishes from sight with his ring that he is taking to propose to Dazzler. Well, this marks the end of the three pages in Secret Wars 2, Issue 4. Mm-hmm. Now, I'll share that I saw Byrne live at a Mansfield, Ohio charity auction after this saw print. He held up three pages of original artwork, and he asked for bidders. No one bid. Come on, who wants to see Alpha Flight get trashed by the Beyonder, he suggested. No one bid. Sweeten it, came calls from the audience. And that pretty much was an insult to the artist of the pages, since nobody would bid. It was an insult to the artist, to Shooter, and to Marvel in general. But I don't recall what came of those pages. I suppose somebody either bought them, or maybe the house bid on them, because they do that in auctions sometimes. Nobody wanted them. Now, there are at least two continuity errors in this. At first, the Beyonder appears in a green jumpsuit. In his next appearance in Alpha Flight 28, he'll be in the same outfit, but colored completely different. And second, North Star leads the attack here. But in Alpha Flight 28, as he objects, he states that the Beyonder attacked them first. This is a complete reversal of what happened. And Puck, Heather, and Aurora will try to tell him to calm down, as things are not quite that simple. Well, I should say not. Somebody did not communicate well with this crossover. And that's my report.
Yep. Oh, yes. Thanks, Kirk. That's a nice bridge into Alpha Flight 28, which is coming next.
Do you want to go with that, Nigel? I don't have anything further to say about.
Okay, yeah, I will continue then and move on to the final John Byrne edition of Alpha Flight. Alpha Flight number 28, cover dated November of 1985, with a release date of the 30th of July, 1985. 65 cents it cost in America. 30p is what I paid for it, I believe. And it would have cost the Canadians 75 cents. 32 pages, 22 of story. Usual creative team. John Byrne, writer, artist, and inker. Keith Williams on inking assist. Andy Yankus did the colouring, Rick Parker the lettering, editors Denny O'Neill and Don Daly, and Jim Shooter, editor-in-chief. Other Byrne works for the cover date of November 1985. Just two things. Fantastic Four number 284. Yeah, he's writer and artist, of course, on that. And as Tim mentioned, it's coming towards the end of his FF run now. And also Marvel graphic novel number 18, Sensational She-Hulk. He was writer and artist of that. Okay, and this, the title of this issue, as has been mentioned already, is Crossover, which is a nice title with a double meaning. One of the meanings being connected to the story itself, and the other one, well, as you know, it sees John Byrne's crossover to another title. So cleverly done there. Right. Now, for the synopsis, I've used mostly the Marvel Wiki synopsis, but added some stuff of my own, which I thought was necessary here and was missing from this original one. So bear with me, because I'll be flicking from one bit to another at times, and I might not get it right. Okay, so here we go. So this is continuing from last issue, Alpha Flight 27. It's also connected with Secret Wars 2, number 4. Right. Following the arrival of the Beyonder in the middle of their fight with Alpha Flight at the West Edmonton Mall, the members of Omega Flight flee the scene. Out in the parking lot, they run into former Gamma Flight recruit Madison Jeffries. Jeffries wants to help Alpha Flight by stopping Omega Flight, as he was annoyed and upset when he learned that they had killed Guardian, who he liked and respected. He uses his mutant power over all things metal to reconstruct a nearby car into a large robot, which he calls Rover. Delphine Courtney orders the Omegans to attack Jeffries, even though Jeffries warns them against it. His robot Defender easily knocks aside Diamond Lil, which has Jeffries rushing to her side, as it seems they might have had a relationship when they were together in Gamma Flight. The robot then easily dispatches Wildchild before turning its attention to Courtney. Unable to defend herself due to the fact that she is still affected by the gunk that Shaman covered her in, she grabs one of Flashback's future selves and uses him to shield her from a blow from the robot. This kills Flashback's double and causes Flashback to collapse, realizing that he could die at any time in the future when his past self plucks him out of the future. Madison then reveals to the others that Courtney has been manipulating them, and using his powers causes the robot to violently throw up its mechanical inner workings, turning itself inside out, and is destroyed. With their leader defeated, Omega Flight is left in the care of Rover, while Madison goes to look for the members of Alpha Flight to take the Omegans into custody. Madison searches the mall and finds Alpha Flight, just as the Beyonder has just made the group realize that they do not need to fight him, and Shaman recognizes him as being more than human, and his outfit is now blue. The Beyonder has proved he is not their enemy by rescuing Talisman from Shaman's medicine pouch. As the Beyonder and Shaman discuss Talisman's power levels, North Star gets angry. He cannot believe this and thinks it is beyond a joke. Then Heather calls for the Alpha Flight team to step down, and with his repayment to Alpha Flight done, the Beyonder teleports away to return to his previous location. See Secret Wars 2, issue 4. With Talisman back, she is furious that her father, Shaman, left her trapped in his bag. Yet another promise he failed to deliver. And she strikes him hard across the face. When Heather tries to talk some sense into the young mystic, she furiously lashes out, teleporting them all back to Alpha Flight's base in Vancouver. The spell works on all the members of the team, except for Snowbird. And they surprise Roger Box when they suddenly appear in front of him. Shaman has taken his daughter's words to heart, and he admits that he has manipulated his daughter to follow her destiny, and he feels nothing but regret. When Box wonders what to do about Omega Flight, Madison Jeffries, who has also been teleported with Alpha Flight to Vancouver, he pipes up and explains that he took care of them. As the members of Alpha Flight remember Jeffries as one of the members of Gamma Flight that didn't join up with the Omegans, And Heather orders everyone to take 2 hours off to clean up and prepare for a debriefing. As Heather takes a bath, she records a log about Alpha Flight's recent mission and also her concerns about Shaman's current state of mind and wonders how it will affect the team. As she's getting dressed, the power suddenly goes out. Upset by this, Heather heads to the main lab to see what is going on. To her shock, Roger and Walter have opened a dimensional nexus to try and pull a being with the appropriate body mass for Walter's soul to leave the robotic body of Fox and possess a new form. Heather is horrified that they went through a plan like this without consulting her or Shaman, their resident expert on other dimensions. As she's telling them all off about the dangers of what they are doing, Fox catches something and begins to reel it in. Something strong. Heather demands that they stop right away, but Walter states that it's too late, and he decides to go for a trans-interface fusion, telling Roger to re-emerge with Fox on his command. With Roger inside the Fox robot, Walter's soul is sent down the line to meet the creature. Jeffries enters the room and he mans the controls, reporting that whatever they are pulling through, it's big.
It's big. Bigger than you.
When Box succeeds in pulling the body through, he soon realizes, too late, that they've pulled back the Hulk as the Green Goliath gets up and strikes him with one powerful punch.
Hulk! Smash!
To be continued somewhere, but what's happened to Walter Lankowski? Where is Snowbird? What will become of Alpha Flight? Does Byrne really care? He's off to pastures green. So check out the Hulk 314, even if it's only for 6 months. And that's it.
Great job.
All right. Great job. That is the last of, as far as I know, I don't think he's ever drawn Alpha Flight again that I know of. That anything's ever come up.
Tim is forgetting X-Men Elsewhen.
You know, I've got to tell you, I was following right along each page until we got to page 15 when Heather takes a bath.
That's where you finished.
She soaks in it, and there's this little picture on my copy on the vanity here in the bathroom, a picture of Mac, and all the rest of the pages in my copy are blank. I don't know what you're talking about. That's where the story should end.
Yeah.
Oh, I said that wrong. At the bottom of page 16, she's running down the hall going, what in the world's going on? A power outage? And that's where the story should have ended. I warned you guys I was going to do that.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, my copy doesn't have a picture of Mac on the vanity.
No.
Yeah.
So I think that's your imagination, Kirk.
That's the what if version of the story.
I actually wrote to Marvel and I suggested if they ever collected this to reprint it and put it out, I strongly recommended that they just stop right there. Of course, what do I know? I'm just a fan. But that's where I wanted it to end instead of all the rest of the fall draw. And of course, they took my suggestion and reacted appropriately. He did nothing. So I got to tell you, I really like this issue because of that it picks up the thread of Omega Flight, that it introduces Jeffries, who I had totally forgotten about, that it gives
Delphine Courtney.
She gets her just desserts.
Mm-hmm.
My God. I can't tell you the emotional catharsis that eighth page has when she rocks back and vomits her insides out.
Yeah.
Another time I was just cheering and my coworkers must have been looking down the hall at the break room and going, what is he doing? So
Well, that's when that the car first starts transforming, for another word, and the terror that Byrne has drawn on her face when she goes, "Oh no, he's here." Yeah, and she immediately realizes who's here, and that's kind of, you know, got her number, because he's the one that can absolutely affect her.
Mm.
And
there's little pinpoints of eyes on the Guardian.
Yeah. And he immediately tells the rest of them, get in front of me, you know. I haven't researched it, but I've always had a suspicion that Madison Jeffries is named after Matt Jeffries, the designer for Star Trek, because we know Byrne is such a huge Star Trek fan. Mm. That's got to be an homage to that.
Mm. Interesting. Yeah.
And there's more than a subtle hint here that there's been a relationship between he and Diamond Lil.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that does come back. I mean, many issues later.
Yeah. Yeah. Because she refers to him. Yeah. As Lil, baby.
Lil comes back. Even Wild Child makes a return. In the future.
Does Flashback come back? Did you just say that?
Nope, I did not say that. No. Okay. I said Wild Child comes back.
So Flashback, as far as we know, vanishes, and that's about it for him, huh?
Yep.
I love on page 8 there the sequence of panels that it's the final confrontation between Jeffries and Courtney, and there's between panels 2 and 3. They're almost matched. Their composition is virtually the same. You see Jeffries with his brow lowered and getting really, determined, angry. And then you see the reaction shot of Delpney pulling the mask off and losing it. I just thought that was brilliant. Mm-hmm. I love that sequence.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, the thing with Jeffries is I like him as a character a lot, but I don't think they've ever been clear that when he's first introduced, he says he can manipulate metal, plastic, glass, and especially manipulate it in a way to mimic the function of like the human body. Because when we first see him, Box throws a box of scraps at him and he makes it into a robotic arm. Mm-hmm. Here he does the same thing with the car. He turns it into a robot. Mm-hmm. I always assumed he could control it kind of like telekinetically. He was making it move. But he talks about, he says, no machine can resist me. And he says, you're just a machine. So he's making her tear her face off. And then, I don't think she's puking her guts out. I think he is physically with his.
Oh, right.
He's doing it.
Yeah.
But when he leaves, he seems like he tells the robot, okay, keep an eye on him. So did he create some type of artificial intelligence in this robot, or is he subconsciously still controlling it when he leaves and goes back into the mall?
It's part of the abilities that are never explained fully to him.
Yeah, that's what I figured. It's just,
I mean, his abilities are over anything non-organic, really.
Yeah.
But the limits to what he can do is never clearly defined, if that makes any sense. They're left very amorphous, nebulous, because what they do with him in the future gets crazy. He becomes their thing that gets him out of every problem is, Madison Jeffries kind of comes in, kind of thing, which becomes very boring in later episodes, frankly.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he gets into that redesigned box, which I hate the design of it. It does not. It is not nearly as good, as well designed as what Byrne had.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. The art style definitely changes between this issue and the next issue for sure.
Oh yeah, so. jarringly.
Yeah, it's a jarring change.
Yeah. Can we just go back to the cover?
Sure.
Just for a minute. So there you go, Kirk, in the top left. The corner box.
I see.
Now you've now got all 8 of the actual members at this stage for the final issue. He's put them all in there.
Yeah, the only two that I don't see, and this can be debated, is Madison Jeffries and with Roger Box.
I guess because Madison Jeffries is not an official member at this stage, and Roger Box is...
He's in the robot.
Not the hero. Yeah, well, he's in the robot, yeah. So he's
then Box. Where's Walter?
Well, Walter? We don't know. He's gone down the line and never met.
He's in the Nexus of Reality, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, nobody's wearing the right clothes. Beyonder's not in the right clothes. He's in like some kind of, I don't know what, sleeveless workout thing. Heather's clothing is colored wrong, and she's not.
Totally wrong. She's got some weird ruffle around her neck as well.
Yeah, and she's in a skirt, I think, in the and I don't think Puck's in his costume. Is he in the... Is he in his costume?
He's in his costume.
Is he?
Yeah, he is.
But I like... It makes me laugh, you know, with the little headings they've got, like as if the Beyonder wasn't bad enough. depending on how you read that, you know, I always read it as if the Beyonder wasn't bad enough, as in, why do we have to have this guy in here?
Yes.
I wonder if Byrne thinks like that when he sees, he might have designed this and he put that on purpose, as if the Beyonder wasn't bad enough.
Oh, I think he's I almost said subtly, but I don't think it's terribly subtle. I think he's doing digs and shots at Shooter and the corporate guys left and right at this point.
Definitely, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think on this cover, the Hulk should be black, just a black silhouette. You could probably still guess who it is, but they don't call him by name. They just say, guess who just dropped in. At least it's all black, that gives you a little more of a... Because that reveal at the end is so great when he comes out and just looks like he's smashing Box in two.
Yeah, I thought Box was gone. Boy, I thought that was like the end.
It's a mess, yeah.
Well, he does cause... Mm-hmm. I think it's later in the next issue, he's worried because... He's in, Box is in the robot, and the robot's damaged. If he comes out, what happens?
Will he be damaged?
Yeah, so he's screwed up too.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm. And then you know we know what Walter. He, I guess, when he went into the Nexus or wherever he's at, he subconsciously realized this was the Hulk, and he didn't want to displace Banner, whatever is left of Banner in there. He didn't want to displace him and take over the body. So he just, I guess, stayed in the Nexus of Realities and let the Hulk come through. Mm-hmm. Could at least warned him, like, hey, look out, it's the Hulk.
Well, I don't know how you're supposed to do that from another dimension.
Well, not like it would have done any good.
Also on the cover, the Secret Wars 2 in the upper right-hand corner continues in this issue. That trade dress went across the entire line to help cross-promote and remind folks that if you want the whole story, you have to pick this up as well. Very clever marketing. In other ways, I find it terribly obnoxious. And as far as the cover goes, his orange top, sleeveless, whatever that is, and then the pants. This is the third color scheme for him. he was green last issue when I mentioned it, totally green in his outfit. This one, he's got a muscle man, I don't know what you want to call that, boxing togs or something. And then inside, as you pointed out, Nigel, he's navy blue for two pages and then departs. So. Yeah. Maybe that navy blue was closer to the green.
The green, yeah.
Because it sure didn't match whatever was on the cover. I don't get that. I wonder if that was...
I'm going to say, is it... Oh, yeah, he's long-sleeved inside inside the comic.
Well, mine looks almost a dark... It's like a dark gray blue on the scan, which is kind of your color. It looks almost like... And it's got that kind of button across. I don't know what kind of style you call that, but it's almost like Ghost Rider's outfit.
It's that sort of style.
Let's face it, this is the Beyonder. His clothes are probably fluctuating and changing constantly. If you were to look at him, his clothes would probably be just rippling all over him, these different styles and colors, because, you know, he's the Beyonder.
Yeah, that occurred to me, except that wasn't established, as I remember. Nothing like that was established. He's basically the Molecule Man in terms of he can do anything.
Yeah,
he can do or manipulate or create anything he wants. So he's sort of like Trelane, but he doesn't know the repercussions or what. He doesn't recognize the rest of the game or how it's going to affect others, or that he should be concerned with how it affects others. And I think that's ultimately what he learns through the 9-part series.
Yeah, that's all about him, because he has no physical form in Secret Wars 1. He's just a voice.
Right.
Because he exists, that entire universe is him. I think they later established that there is a race. I think that they call themselves the Beyonders. There's a race of people. He's not unique by himself. But yeah, I think his powers. I mean, the Molecule Man is pretty powerful, but I think the Beyonder dwarfs that, because he is he's more powerful than Galactus. I think his is almost unlimited.
Mm. Right. And Molecule Man is unstable. As they wrote him, he's a nebbish. He's unstable. He's a basket case with all this power. But that's that's another story thread.
Yeah. Organs. I believe that the idea that there was a race called the Beyonders came long before Secret Wars was ever thought of, I think.
Really?
So, yeah. The Beyond, well, I first encountered it. It was in Marvel 2-in-1, round about issues. Let me see, what would it be? Round about issue 40 odd. It was the Thing and her. You know, her, the opposite of him, Adam Warlock, and also Starhawk from the Guardians of the Galaxy. And basically, her was trying to find Warlocks, who was at that time he was dead. So she was looking for his body, and they get involved with Counter-Earth. And then these aliens come along and they're stealing Counter-Earth. And they say that they're taking it to this race called the Beyonders. So that's the first time they were mentioned. That's why when Secret Wars first came out and they were talking about the Beyonder, I thought, now then, is this one of these Beyonders? And he could have been, I guess. And they said they were sort of like akin to gods, you know.
They're like the Q. Think of them kind of as the continuum from Star Trek.
Yeah. So the idea, anyway, was out there long before.
That might have been where Shooter got it.
Yeah, I was going to say, I can't remember who wrote those Marvel 2-in-1 issues, but he would have had access to it anyway. But
yeah, well, I think we can all admit that the one of the driving forces behind Secret Wars 1 was the toy line. They had a whole, it was really meant to sell toys, which is...
Secret Wars! Secret decoding shield of the dreaded Dr. Doom has ordered him to blow up the Freedom Tower!
Dr. Octopus, Dr. Doom, Captain America, and Spider-Man each sold separately.
Here's how it works, Dr. Octopus. Just slip the secret message in the secret shield. Now our secret mission is revealed! How do we stop him, Captain America?
That's our secret, Spider-Man.
Dr. Doom, Captain America, and other action figures from the Marvel Secret Wars collection, each sold separately. New from Mattel.
You know, I like Secret Wars 1. I think the art's great, and I think the story's pretty good. It's not, you know, it usually gets compared to Crisis because they kind of went parallel with each other. It's not Crisis. Crisis dealt with much bigger ideas. But I will say to your point, Kirk, about the crossovers, which is the norm now. You're going to have a company-wide crossover. All the books, you're going to have some kind of thing sprinkled in. Secret Wars 1 didn't. It you had one issue where they left, if they were going to be involved in the story, they left when they went to Central Park and got teleported away. The next issue, they're back. And you're like, well, what happened? And you're like, well, I have to read these 12 issues over 12 months to find out what happened in between those two issues. It wasn't a crossovers, you know, because the next issue, like the FF, suddenly they're coming back and here's She-Hulk. And you're like, wait a minute, where's Ben? Why is She-Hulk dressed in a FF uniform? As opposed to now where it's, you know, it became very corporate where, and Marvel was terrible about it, about every, for a while they did it in the summer with the annuals. They went big storyline and went through all the annuals, but they'd have one that ran through the mutant books. Or they would do something and it had the main book and then you'd have all the little bits and pieces that had to be shoehorned into every issue. So I'm sure as a writer or editor, it became frustrating.
Oh, yeah. But what are you going to do when your boss has scored success with the concept and then says, let's do another?
That's the thing. I mean, you can rail against it all you want, but you work for a company. If the company says do this, you got to do it. You know, it's kind of comes with dealing and working in somebody else's sandbox. But
we've recently learned that maybe somebody has figured out a way to beat them at their own game. And I'm holding up a copy of X-Men Elsewhere. I don't know. Your points are very valid and very correct, Tim.
Well, no, I mean, it does. I mean, and Byrne has not been shy about, he would rail against authority a lot because, you know, I'm sure as a writer on a book, you're like, I know better about this book than my boss. Who's just, absolutely. You know, I've been on the book, I've been writing it, I know about these characters. And I'm sure that happens with, I'm sure other writers the same way. It's like, why do I have to, because he would say, I have to stop what I'm doing. I've got this, like, I'm in mid-story. I got to stop what I'm doing, insert the Beyonder, and then move on. So it just kind of breaks your rhythm. And I'm sure other writers are the same way. They're like, I don't want to deal. I don't want the Beyonder in my book. I don't want, you know, whatever's going on. I don't want that in my book, you know. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think to different degrees, you could embrace it. Or just put in a 1-2 page appearance and then be done with it. Different people, if they could see a way to do it, would deal with it more fully. But geez, when you're developing a storyline that's rolling and all of a sudden out of left field, somebody tells you that you have to shoehorn in another element or do something, it's got to be terribly frustrating, especially when you've already got your storyline approved, your editor's on board, that you're moving, that you're trying to, you know, get momentum and your fans are on board and you're headed in one direction. And then to arbitrarily have the rug pulled out from under you, that's how I read this. I looked at this and went, Byrne didn't want the Beyonder. This is the thing that set him off. In my view, not seeing all the clues that this was planned for a while, I took this as the straw that broke the camel's back and why he bailed on Alpha Flight. If you read his concluding comment in the last page of the issue, he writes a pretty concise little thing saying, hey, I only wanted to do 12 issues. And then that suggested 15 issues and then 18 and then 24. And it turns out that I got 28 issues out of this team. And I've said all the stories that I want to. Mm-hmm. So he kind of puts it in perspective that it wasn't a, you know, last minute huff or I'm taking my ball and leaving.
I don't think this is what made him leave the book, but
no. But it sure felt that way as I was going for the ride reading this. I mean, I had no idea exactly what was coming next issue or how this was all playing out. But boy, by the time the next issue and the next artwork hits, I can't tell you how many people I know that I've talked with online or that have posted have said that they bailed at this point. And as a person who stuck around through at least at issue 100, although I can't remember the next, you know, 60 some issues, I'm afraid, I wish I had bailed, because they never sounds like I'm giving a eulogy. They never achieved the greatness that the first 2 years hit.
Well, I mean, it depends. What are you reading the book because you like Byrne, you like his artwork? Are you reading the book because you like Alpha Flight as characters, or what's keeping you on the book? I mean, there are certain characters they'll stick with a book through terrible writing and terrible art because you like the character. You just kind of wait it out and hope till somebody else comes on. And then there's others, like I would do the same thing. I think I stayed maybe to issue 50, and then I jumped off. And Fred, I think you stayed to about 100.
I stayed initially in the 80s. I stayed around until issue 50 in the 80s and 90s.
Okay.
But when the talk of us covering Alpha Flight came on, I was very excited to dig my issues out. And then I had heard things going on of like people morphing into other characters, and I wanted to see that. And so I read up until like 120 or so, and then I kind of lost the thread kind of thing, because they've gone through different volumes. Like there's volume 1, volume 2, volume 3 of Alpha Flight. There are different iterations over the many decades of where the story has gone, and it just got really confusing, frankly.
Fred, I am so sorry for you. I just... Just to have to slog through that, my heart bleeds for you.
But the thing is like, I don't, you know, I never followed particular artists. I was following the story and characters, and character development is how I always read a comic book. Like if I don't see development, if I don't see growth and change and evolution, I kind of lose interest if it's just going to be the same thing regurgitated. Kind of thing. Yep. I lose interest in comic books and move on to something else at that point. So,
right.
But that's just me.
Well, folks.
Nido, did you drop off right after Byrne left?
I did. Yeah. I mean, it's funny what you said about that, Tim, bringing it up about the reasons why you're reading a particular title. And to begin with, I mean, obviously I was reading it because it was Byrne, because I loved the artwork and everything. And I was also reading it because I liked the characters. But over the period of this 28 issues, or 28 months, if you like, because of some of the things that Byrne decided to do with the characters, which I were becoming like quite fond of.
Like killing Guardian?
Yeah, that's first one. And then he carried on like doing things that I didn't particularly like. I mean, I didn't like it when he changed Aurora slightly. I didn't like finding out that Sasquatch was really one of the great beasts, so that meant that was the end of that character, and so on and so on. And so because of all these things he did with the characters over those, let's say from issue 12 onwards, when it came to this point, issue 28, it was like, you know, not only was I losing the artwork from here on, because Byrne was not going to be drawing it anymore, and that was one of the, you know, the biggest draws, if you like, but he'd also spoilt some of the characters that I liked in such a way that I thought, well, I'm not bothered about following what happens next, you know, even for them, because they've been altered in a way that I don't particularly like anyway. And thinking about issues of Alpha Flight that I have seen that came just after Byrne had left. I don't think I would have lasted long, even if I had have carried on getting it, because the artwork was, yeah, not to my liking at all. And along with what they continued to do with these characters and the way the stories were going, yeah, I don't think I would have lasted much beyond, say, about issue 40. I would have been kicking it into touch, because it wouldn't have been doing enough for me anymore, either story-wise or art-wise. But yeah, I jumped off immediately because, yeah, I was a bit pissed off that he was leaving the book, you know, because like I said, it wasn't until the announcement at the end of issue 27 that I knew he was going to be leaving. Because, I mean, I was back in Britain then and just happily buying my copy every month when it came into the local comic shop. I didn't know what was afoot, you know,
right.
back in America, and what decisions were being made about who was doing what. And so it came as a bit of a shock, yeah.
Well, some books
I'm going to say that's always been the disappointment when people ask about, do I like Alpha Flight? With, you know, Byrne's Alpha Flight, should I say. Mm-hmm. And it's like, yes and no. Because, of course, I liked the artwork. You can't beat it. That was one of the main reasons why I would read anything that Byrne was doing. And as I say, I got to liking the characters as well. But then the things he did with them, I thought, no, you know, no, why are you doing that sort of thing? Why have you killed the main character here? Why are you changing this character there? What are you doing? You know, you're spoiling it for me. So that kind of, yeah, when it came time to make a decision when he was leaving, as I say, that had an influence on it. I thought, oh, well, you know, if I'm not going to get the nice art to look at anymore either, that's it. I just jump over to the Hulk, you know.
Yeah, that's what everybody did.
And well, you did. And, you
and
stuck
that's
with
what
Hulk,
I did.
Right?
I went to the Hulk. And then what happened after six issues?
I think that's what started me. That's what started me on the Hulk. I started reading him, and then I stayed in the Hulk for a long time. Because after he left... Peter David came on, and I stayed on the Hulk for probably 10 years.
Yeah. Well, again, I was just miffed again because I thought, oh, they're kicking him off the Hulk now. What the hell? And so I just stopped getting it because I thought, no. And I knew, was it Milgrom that took over on that as well? I'm not a big fan of his artwork. So
no, he's not. Yeah, Milgrom did take over for a bit until.
Yeah, for a bit. Yeah. So that was the end of that. But another thing is, as I've learnt in more recent years about what Byrne had in mind for what he was going to do with the Hulk, I'm glad he did leave it, because I don't think I would have liked that either.
Well, so, he said that his goal was always to do 100 issues in whatever book he was on. I don't think he's done 100 issues of anything. He's come close to it.
I'm gonna say he never does anywhere near that, does he?
No, but that's
that
a lot.
Was the close.
Well, wait a minute. The FF.
No, he did.
100 issues is 8 years roughly if they come out monthly.
Hmm.
I think he was getting close to.
He was getting close.
He did about six. He did about 6 years for FF. Yeah, yeah. That was about his longest run I can think of. But yeah, in fact, yeah, then the more I think about it, as much as I'm a fan and everything, whenever he's the writer as well as the artist, he always does something in his stories that I don't like. So in a way, I just prefer him to be the art man. And let's Roger Stern and John Byrne is the best team, I think, for stories. Yeah, that I like anyway, that please me completely. Stern and Byrne, yeah. Ben keeps doing.
Well, you should pick up the Captain America War and Remembrance.
Well, I've got those Captain America issues that they did, but unfortunately, it didn't last too long, did it? That would have been a good run if it had lasted longer.
Well, the odd thing is, I'm asking this at a con in Boston. I said, "What do you consider yourself? An artist that writes or a writer that draws?" And he said he considers himself a writer that draws. And I said, well, if you can only do one moving forward, draw or write, he said, write. He considers himself a writer.
I don't. Yeah.
I think he's a better artist than he is writer.
Yeah, I do. Yeah. Well, it depends on the individual. I mean, some people probably liked what he decided to do, you know, with regard to the story in his various runs. It's just that what he always decided to do with the characters, I didn't like it. I mean, FF was probably one of the best runs, but even then, he still spoilt it near the end because I hated what he did with Alicia, which is why, when they finally discovered that it was really a Skrull, I was like, yay! So Alicia, it's not Alicia, yes. So Ben can have Alicia back. Because those two belong together. And that's it. Yeah, you can't change that.
Well, I have mixed feelings about that. Nigel, I was going to recommend that if you wanted to sample of the next year or so of Alpha Flight that you didn't buy, I would recommend you go find issue 41 where they introduced the Purple Man, Zebediah Kilgrave's daughter. I don't recall her name, but that she, I'll spoil a little bit for you. She takes control of North Star and forces him into several acts, and I don't remember the story well enough to shade it with any innuendo, but she forces him to do things against his will until, strangely enough, whenever he dunks underwater, he comes out of it.
Because the pheromones wash off of him.
You might find that interesting, because I have that's the next strongest memory I have of Alpha Flight, a couple of really bad family relations right around issue 30. That's the next high point for me.
Yeah. The only one I did have, I think, either two or three issues of Alpha Flight, and that's because they crossed over with the Avengers, and it was to do with the Submariner Marina coupling. That's why I bought those, because they connected with Avengers. But I haven't even kept those. They've gone as well, but they were the only ones I bought after Burn.
Well, that makes sense.
And as I say, that was for that particular reason, because it connected with Avengers, what was going on in the Avengers at the time, which I was reading regularly. Yeah.
Yes. And that's a very tragic relationship that ends for Namor as well. Let's not spoil it, but that he's cursed. Whoever he couples up with always winds up dying. I think that's a trope. Are there any other points we need to hit before we put a fork in it?
Well, I've got, like I said, we were talking off mic. I've got a, this won't take long. I've got a little synopsis here that I'm calling After Alpha Flight. And it's kind of, you know, at the end of a movie, when sometimes they'll show you pictures of the characters of the film and say, this guy went off to do this. This guy went off to
do that. Animal House.
Animal House, American Graffiti, things like that. That's what this is. Right. So I've kind of put bullet points together for all of the main Alpha Flight characters as to what they did after Byrne left the book. Now, this is not comprehensive, and I don't have issue numbers or dates, really, and it doesn't necessarily go up to what's going on currently. But this skill gives you an idea of what they did after Byrne, you know, released them to the wild and the other writers and artists took a hold of them. So bear with me quickly. We're going to start with James McDonald Hudson, also known as Guardian. Apparently, you know, the story that Daphne gives about him being teleported to Ganymede and being resurrected by the Corlin, however you pronounce him, apparently that really happened. And he was rebuilt, but he was in a coma, and rocks and oil had him, like, on ice. But at some point, he's revived by Jeffries and Forge. He rejoins Alpha Flight, but he's very cold and unemotional because he's half-machine. And then at some point, his Quirlan programming is activated, and he kidnaps Alpha Flight and Avengers to fight Galactus. But he sacrifices himself to save the Earth and the Quirlan homeworld, so he's dead again. But he was actually rescued at one point after that by the Master, and he was brainwashed and became anti-guard. And a leader of the new Omega Flight. But he rejects the Master's control. At some point, Department H produced semi-organic synthoid duplicates of him. One was a younger version of himself who joined Alpha Flight. But then he comes back, rejoins Alpha Flight, reconciles with Heather. They have a daughter. He then leaves Earth again to escort a series of Plotix eggs that had been hatched to their homeworld. And then at some point, he comes back and he joins something called the Alpha Flight Space Program. So, that's Guardian. Okay. That's what's in his future. Okay. Wow. Heather. Heather, the government starts to, you know, they decide to refund Alpha Flight. Box and Jeffries build her a new suit based on the one that Courtney was wearing. She becomes involved with Madison Jeffries. When James returns, she becomes Guardian and he becomes Vindicator. When she thinks James is dead again and a younger clone of James joins the team, she gives birth to a daughter. She is thought killed by a collective, or the collective, which is a, I don't know what that is. It's a being or a group of people or something that wipe out most of Alpha Flight. She's thought dead. She is controlled by the Master of the World, but she turns on the Master and rescues her daughter. She goes into hiding because she's kind of been driven crazy because Department H is looking for her. And then at some time later, she becomes a new nemesis. So this is all like kind of whet your appetite about what you want to, you know, keep reading. All right, Snowbird. Now this is what I read, and this I think it must take place as a retcon or in a different book, because this is before the stuff we've covered. At one point, Loki tried to gift humanity with the gift of evolution, but they were going to sacrifice their imagination. And because of that, Snowbird faded from the mortal memory, and she was near death. But for some reason, Wolverine could remember her, so he was able to nurse her back to health. I guess this is the next issue. When the Hulk shows up, she becomes a white Sasquatch and fights the Hulk. She marries Doug Thompson, and they have a child. The child grows at an unnatural rate, I guess, with inside her. And then Pestilence, which is one of the great beasts, correct? Yes. Corrupts the child, and Snowbird is forced to kill her own child. But she also
isn't one of the great beasts, though.
Yeah, she is. He is, right?
No, he's not.
He's not? Okay. Well, Pestilence, whoever Pestilence is, corrupts the child, and she's forced to kill her own kid. But she also dies, and then her soul and her child's soul and then Doug, who I guess has also died, ascend into paradise. And then she continues to kind of guide Alpha Flight from the afterlife as kind of a Ben Kenobi force ghost. But then later she is found that she's not dead, and she's found as captive of AIM, who are trying to clone her. And when they do rescue her from AIM, she rejoins Alpha Flight. So, okay. Michael T. Youngman, also known as Shaman. Because of what happened with his daughter, he loses his faith, and that affects his ability to do magic. So he trains with his grandfather's spirit to regain his power. He earns a new magical totems or items. He gets a spirit staff, a caribou robe, and an eagle's headdress. Later, he dons a talisman tiara and becomes Talisman. But the more he uses his power, the more he loses his humanity. And after a battle with Pestilence, he leaves Alpha Flight and is teleported away. Later, Alpha Flight sought him out and Elizabeth to, and Elizabeth took back. Oh, Elizabeth and Alpha Flight searched him out, and she takes the tiara back and becomes Talisman again. He becomes Shaman again. And then later he's killed by the Collective. And I think he's still dead. Walter Lankowski, Sasquatch. His is interesting. As we said, he refused to enter the Mindless Hulk because he didn't want to displace Banner's consciousness. So he lived in the crossroads of reality where he entered the body of Smart Aleck. And that may be where he crawls out because Walter is in his body. When Snowbird's deceased Snowbird's deceased Sasquatch body was possessed by Pestilence, Walter left Shaman's pouch and entered the box robot. He battled Pestilence until he forced the spirit out of the body, and then he entered the body. So now he's Sasquatch again. But when he became human, he was a female. So he became Wanda Lankowski. After several months, as Snowbird's spirit returned, took control of the body, and somehow that allowed him to return to his original male form. And then there's stuff that I didn't read, but apparently at one point, because he didn't legally change his name to Wanda, he wasn't able to collect any of his inheritance, and his ex-wife took it from him. So he lost all his money. He fought Guardian in Antarctica. He found Guardian in Antarctica. So this is one point Guardian came back. At one point, he formed a new Alpha Flight and started up a relationship again with Aurora. And later, he joined the Alpha Flight space program. All right, Eugene Judd, also known as Puck. He discovered something called the Fire Fountain in the Arctic Circle. And because of that, he was cured of his dwarfism by the fountain. But it was a trick by Loki. And then Judd became a dwarf again. And then Black Razor, who was some kind of a demon or something that he was keeping trapped in his body, escapes from his body and Judd becomes normal height again. But Judd takes back Black Razor and returns to being a dwarf. Later, the curse was removed by Loki and Puck was tall again, but old. He was an old man. Loki sent him to Tibet and then to the realm of the Dream Queen, where she turned him young again because she wanted to torture him forever. He escapes the Dream Queen. Later, he is killed in the attack by the Collective, where he was sent to Hell, and he eventually ruled Hell, but then left his throne to go back to Earth to help Alpha Flight. Later, he starts a relationship with Talisman and joined the Alpha Flight space program. It's apparently where everybody goes. Jean Marie or Aurora. At one point, Loki convinced her she was a half-elf. Later, she lost her power and went to stay at a monastery. She fell in love with Wildchild after he became handsome. And he changed his name to Wild something else. He wasn't calling himself Wild Child. It was something. But he became good looking, so she fell in love with him. Later, she was exposed to a sentient bacteria, which revived her alternate personality. She joined the Weapon X program and had an affair with the director. During the secret invasion, she joined Osborn's X-Men, when he turned Shield into Hammer. Jean-Paul Northstar. At some point, his terrorist activities became public knowledge, but because he took place in such a small amount of attacks or activities, whatever, the government pardoned him. He took up skiing again, but his secret identity was revealed, and because of that, he was stripped of all his medals, because he couldn't prove that he did not use his powers. Then Northstar fell ill, and they took him to the Fire Fountain for a cure. And that's where Loki, and he did the same. He told him and Aurora they were both half-elves, and that's why they were sick. Aurora used her light power to heal him, but then she lost her powers. Later, he's trapped in Asgard. Northstar tried to transfer his power to his powerless sister. It worked, and the twins could not generate light again by touching. Sometime later, he adopted an HIV-positive baby, but unfortunately, the baby didn't live long, but because of that, he came out as gay. And then later, he joins the X-Men and actually teaches at Xavier Institute. This is the sad one. Roger Box, or Box.
This is the only sad one, is it?
Well, they're all...
They're all pretty sad. Yeah. God.
Roger asks Lionel Jeffries, brother to Madison Jeffries, who can control organic matter, to restore his legs. And Roger's giving legs and a younger body. And he starts to kind of flirt with Aurora. But his new body starts to decompose because Lionel used decaying matter to rebuild his body. He becomes insanely jealous of Aurora's wandering eye. He attacks her and is forced to be trapped in the Box robot body. Box and Scramble, which is what Lionel Jeffries calls himself, they somehow merge to form Omega. Box regains his sanity due to that, and was separated by Persuasion. That's the purple girl, purple man's daughter.
Thank you.
Yeah. But Scramble wants to remain as Omega, so he lobotomizes Box, and they stay merged. But then Omega is destroyed by Madison Jeffries after he gets into the Box. And when he goes into the Box robot, because of his powers, it becomes like a transformer. He can make the Box robot do whatever. So he forms a big cannon and he kills Omega. They are killed. So as far as I know, it's Alpha Flight 49. Box is still dead. He doesn't come back. Madison Jeffries, who, to my knowledge, didn't get a code name. After Box is dead, he takes over the robot. He killed Omega when he merged with Box. He then starts a relationship with Heather. But then he breaks it off and he determines that he's still in love with Diamond Lil. He helps revive James Hudson when captured by Roxxon. He marries Diamond Lil and they retire. He later rejoins Alpha Flight. Then he's brainwashed by Weapon X and forced to help with the new Sentinels. Okay, is it Tumman's bedtime? he was one of the few mutants to retain his power during M-Day. Then he helped the Beast to try to turn on the X gene again so he'd have more mutants born. And then he died in Sabretooth and the Exiles number 4 in 2023. So he's dead now. And Elizabeth, two young men, or Talisman. When her father loses his faith, she forces new magic on him when he loses his faith. She loses the tiara during a battle of pestilence. She tried to take it back, but then Shaman grabs it. He becomes Talisman. She leaves the FF and becomes an archaeologist again. She's reunited with Alpha Flight during a battle with the Dream Queen, and she took back the tiara and became Talisman again, and he became Shaman again. She briefly joined Beta Flight after a battle with the Master of the World, because she needed training again. She reconciled with her father after the Infinity Crusade. Later, she began a relationship with Puck. All the Alpha Flight's hooking up with each other. And last is Marina, and from what I can find, I think most of her future appearances are not in Alpha Flight, but in Avengers or other books. At one point, she teamed up with Alpha Flight and Rom the Space Knight to fight the Dire Wraiths. I think this is outside of Burn's run. She would have continually helped the FF from time to time. She fought the Collector with Alpha Flight and Spider-Man, probably in a team-up book.
Yep.
She fell into a deep depression when, once again, she was confronted by her true nature. She teamed up with Power Pack to fight Snake Eyes. Later, she was captured by Atuma and held prisoner in Atlantis. But she was rescued by Namor and the Avengers in Alpha Flight. Her and Namor marry. She assisted the Avengers in several missions. At one point, she thought she was pregnant from Namor, and she was growing all of these, like, egg sacs all over or something, and she was going to leave, but then they she reverted back. Then she reverted into her beast form and became this big Leviathan, attacked several ships in New York Harbor, and she was building a nest, and Namor was forced to kill her with the ebony sword. I think that's Black Knight's sword.
Yep.
But then later it's found out that she is not dead, she was just mostly dead, and she was hiding, or she was like in a coma under the water or something. And then she comes back, and I don't remember what happened to her. So she has been off and on, but most of her stuff has to be done with Namor, not the Alpha Flight crew.
Yeah.
So that's it. Unless anybody's got any other. That's their main stories.
Wow. Pretty gruesome.
Yeah, it goes off the rails a little bit.
A little bit?
Well, I was going to say that reminds me of a Blackadder episode where he says there was only one problem with all that Baldrick, to which you're supposed to say, "What was that, Mr. B?" It was all bollocks.
Baldrick, it's a brilliant plan.
Is it?
Yes, it's superb.
Permission to write home immediately, sir. This is the first brilliant plan a Baldrick's ever had.
Well, it's weird to read that like that. You're basically playing 10, 15, 20 years condensed into a couple paragraphs, and you know, it maybe dozens of different writers are taking their little stab at it.
Yeah. But it's so it's just listening to that, though. It's so downer, isn't it?
None of them happy endings.
Every character, it's just like, come on, God.
I'll give you a positive. Northstar had his wedding on the cover of an X-Men, his wedding to a dude. It was like the first same-sex marriage was covered in the X-Men, and it was Northstar's wedding.
Yeah, he was. I remember that when, not that issue, I don't think, Fred, but when he comes out as gay, that was like a hot issue. And everybody, you gotta go get it. And I did. I admit, I went out and got it, thinking, oh, this may be worth something.
And you know, in hindsight, this whole thing about his illness was never really said what he was ill with, but from the LGBT community that was reading it, we knew what that was.
Yeah.
Because that was the 80s, 90s. They were talking about AIDS there, but they couldn't say it.
Yes. Yeah,
you know, so I mean, there was interesting stuff going on with these characters.
Yeah, go ahead, Kirk.
Well, I was just going to urge anybody who doesn't like how these characters resolved, you know, just write to Mr. Byrne, Alpha Flight Elsewhen. We want a happier version of where you would have taken these characters. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure he'll pay attention to us. But, you know, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility if he has his faculties and his abilities to do at least a trade paperback of where he might have taken the characters or where he, you know, to do a short story. I don't know.
It just depends if
maybe it's wishful thinking.
Well, it really is if he has told everything he wanted to say.
Right. So let's encourage him.
Yeah. Well, I think if Elsewhen, from the response that Elsewhen Elswyn is getting, I think that may be encouraging. We'll call
I don't
it.
Know. How old is he now?
70.
Is he 80?
No, about 75.
Yeah.
He could do what Robert Jordan did with the Wheel of Time and just write the outline, and then somebody else will actually fill the outline in for him.
Yeah. Or he could write it and somebody else could draw it if he can't.
Yeah.
There you go.
We'll call
him. Well, he always said he's a writer more than an artist. I disagree with that, but you know.
I don't think if it doesn't have burn art, it's not going to sell as well.
You want a good example, Tim? Do you recall the end of Namor the Submariner, where he continued to write for 6 issues and somebody else came in to do the art? Do you remember how distasteful that was? I'm afraid what we would be set up for.
Yeah, it was Jay Lee.
Shade against Jay Lee, but that you know, maybe it was cleverly plotted and it was all cohesive, and then he had a point where he was driving that, but boy, that artwork distracted.
It was so jarring. The style of art was so different that you're like getting whiplash, like, wait a minute, what's going on here? If he does it, we'll call it Return Flight.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
We've been talking about 2 hours here, folks. And I think some of us are going to have to move on. So are there any final comments to make or to share, recognizing that this may be the last in a series of Alpha Flight reviews that we've done?
I think that this is it for Burn Alpha Flight. He didn't do the annuals. He didn't do anything else. So this is it.
Yeah.
But it was a good run. I mean, it's worth, I think if you're a Burn fan, it's worth, and you can usually pick these up cheap if you want to get the actual floppies. It's worth reading them. It's a good ride and the artwork's great.
Okay. Yeah. I have one more Burn topic to bring up only because it's fresh in my mind because I've been dealing with it today. So grant me about 60 seconds so I can share this. As you will recall, our coverage of Namor the Submariner included a chapter or two where they go to the Savage Land. And when Namor goes to the Savage Land and encounters Iron Fist and that whole situation evolves, he is followed by Phoebe Mars and Namorita. When Phoebe Mars gets there, she disrobes out of the snow parka into a bikini, and Namorita says, I wouldn't do that if I were you. And she said, why not? It's hot here. She says, well, and a giant mosquito swoops down and stings her on the back. She says, that's why. It's a funny one-page bit. But my point in telling you this is because the Burn artwork that shows Phoebe slipping out of the parka also very clearly demonstrates that she's in a somewhat revealing bikini top and pants, two-piece bathing suit that barely covers her. Let me leave it at that. But some other fan with Photoshop skills has gotten a hold of the artwork and shrunk the triangles of cloth that were over her bosom and erased the strap that was across her hip so that the finished page, the modified page, implies that she is much more voluptuous, much more adult, and going commando. And that modified page is making the rounds now and is in some sort of a database that's being called on by anybody who's calling up that issue. So in other words, our history, Burn's history, has been changed by somebody with a heavy hand who photoshopped his artwork to tell a more revealing story than he intended. Now, I got in an argument today with somebody who was trying to tell me, no, that's the original artwork. And I'm like, no, it isn't. The floppy page issue wasn't that revealing, and it was a comic code book. So I'm engaged in a discussion with somebody who wants to see the original artwork. And I've been able to, thank you to Brian Hughes, find a copy, a scan of that floppy issue, and I forward it to them. So this part of Burn News is, hey, next time you see that page, when it surfaces, look for the waistline. Look for the string bikini waistline. If it's not on her hip, post immediately that this is not the original artwork, because the original artwork did have that. And it means that whoever is passing this page off, sharing it, doesn't realize that it's been altered artwork. And I'll get off my soapbox now. So I think the man deserves his credit, and he doesn't deserve to be altered like that. Although it's, I'm not surprised to see somebody do it. Every time I see it, I get mad, because I don't think that wasn't the intent. That was a drooling fanboy going over the line. And with that, I'll stop my comments, because we're over 2 hours now.
Well, Kirk, why don't
you... Any further comments?
I was just going to say, why don't you tell all the drooling fanboys how they can get a hold of us?
I'll do my best. If you have a contrary opinion, if you liked our coverage, if you want to send us suggestions for what you want us to cover next, you can always find us on the Third Degree Burn Facebook page, and that's probably the fastest way to get a reaction and to share artwork or share questions. The other way to get us is to write to the email, which is gottagetburned@gmail.com. And the third way, I always need help with this because I'm not on iTunes or Apple Tunes or whatever it is. You could give us a 5-star review. Help me out, Tim. What's it called?
It's just Apple Podcast.
Apple Podcast?
Yeah.
We would always appreciate a review. If it's 5 stars, we'll give you a nod and thank you very much. But those are the ways, as far as I know, to reach us if you have any comments to share. Yeah, anything else, guys?
No, Facebook is the best way to get to reach out to us or get feedback or anything like that. That's where most of our stuff gets posted. So
I want to take a moment to do a special thanks to Tim Elliott for being our editor and processing the sound and putting these podcasts together and creating graphics to promote them. He's done a Herculean effort over the years with assistance of everybody from Nigel to Brian to myself. But I appreciate Tim so much, because it is no small task to pull a show together every couple of weeks and put it out. And I understand that Tim is going to take a break from doing this, so there may be a little gap in some of our shows, but rest assured, 50% of the effort has been Tim, and I thank you very much.
Oh, that's okay. The artwork I love doing, because that's my thing. And then editing is, sometimes it can feel a chore, but sometimes it, when you get to find little things to add in and sprinkle in things, it can be a lot of fun too. It just really depends on when finding a time is the hardest part. But thank you, Kirk. I appreciate it. You guys work too. I mean, Nigel's been great at posting little hints and little coming to's and things like that. And Kirk, you're always commenting on Facebook and stuff, so you kind of keep the flame going there. So John and Nigel are doing their own little side stuff. So you get the guy will go, I'm just taking a break for a bit because I got some stuff I got to take care of.
All right. Well, I guess for Third Degree Burn, I want to go around the table and say thank you. Thanks to Tim Elliott.
Thank you.
Nigel Svink, our fan in Japan.
Yes, thank you. It's been a blast.
The man on the West Coast, Fred West.
Thanks, everybody. It's been really fun to participate in this.
I thank you very much for joining, Fred. And I'm Kirk Greenfield. Thanks for listening, guys, and we'll see you next show. Good night.
If you try to do any ethnic or racial or national group, there will be people who jump down your throat because you're doing a representation. And one of my favorite stupid letters, and hopefully, since this is going to be on in Canada, the person who wrote this letter will hear this and know that I thought it was stupid. When I did Alpha Flight number one, Jim Hudson, Guardian, comes home from a tough day at the office, and his wife offers him a cup of tea. Let me make you a cup of tea. And I got this letter from this person tearing a strip off me. Because, damn it, we drink coffee in Canada, you know. And I said, yeah, but we drink tea, too. You know, this isn't supposed to be definitive here. But they get off on these things.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Now everybody's gone. Good day.
Good day.
We'll be right back.
Thanks for listening. You can find us and many other great shows at tutufreaks.com. That's TWOTRUEFREAKS.com. Third Degree Burn is spelled with the number 3, RDDEGREEBYRNE, and is part of the Tutu Freaks network of shows. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Just look for Third Degree Burn, spelled with the number 3, and Burn spelled BYRNE. Compliments, complaints, and recipes can be sent to gottagetburned@gmail.com. That's GOTTAGETBYRNED@gmail.com. Drop us a line and tell us how we're doing. Till next time, this has been Third Degree Burn.
Some men aren't looking for anything logical, like money. They can't be bought, bullied, reasoned, or negotiated with. Some men just want to watch the world burn.